From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, sad news from the state's capital, where the newly elected mayor, Greg Fisk, a fisheries consultant, was found dead in his home Monday afternoon. The annual Yukon Lamprey Run is on, but don't blink or you'll miss it. And the Fish Board member from Dillingham won't be allowed to participate in all of the action at the Bristol Bay Finfish meeting going on now. All that and smuggling turtles in your pants for fun and profit. Apparently lots and lots of profit. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Juneau's newly elected mayor was found dead in his home Monday afternoon. Greg Fisk, a longtime fisheries advocate and consultant, was 70 years old. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
The Juneau Police Department received a 911 call reporting the discovery of Mayor Greg Fisk's body around 3:30 Monday afternoon. The call was made by the mayor's son, Ian Fisk. Chief Bryce Johnson said it's unknown how long Fisk had been dead before he was found. He confirmed people were unable to contact Fisk Monday morning, which prompted his son Ian to check on him. On Monday night, neighbors on Star Hill gathered in the street to remember Fisk. Fisheries historian Bob King was Fisk's next-door neighbor, good friend, and the chairman of his mayoral campaign. Fisk was elected as the city's mayor in October.
It's just so sad that a person with so much promise, so many great ideas, would be snuffed so soon within his term as mayor.
Fisk was a commercial fisherman and owned Seafisk Consulting and Management. He had served on the city's Docks and Harbors Board, the city's Fisheries Development Committee, the Juneau Economic Development Council Board, and the Downtown Business Association. King said his friend often spoke about fish and fisheries management over dinner conversations.
Fish was very important to him, and the responsible management of that natural resource, which is incredibly controversial. But he would jump into that fray and always be involved.
As his next-door neighbor, King said he'll miss interacting with Fisk on a regular basis.
That image of him sitting in his window in his office, and he was always sitting there working, you know, it's just very, very sad that I won't be seeing that face in that window again.
Fisk leaves behind his son Ian and grandson Kai. With help from Jennifer Canfield and Mika Wilson, I'm Lisa Fu in Juneau.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
The annual run of lamprey is headed up the Yukon River. As KIYU's Tim Bodoni reports, diverse commercial markets for the snake-like eel have opened up over the past few years, but actually catching the critters can be tricky.
To catch a Yukon River lamprey, you need good, solid river ice and perfect timing. For almost 15 years, Quipuc Fisheries has tried to operate a commercial lamprey fishery on the lower Yukon sometime around Thanksgiving, but General Manager Jack Schulte says more than other fisheries, this one is hit or miss.
It's not a run that, like salmon, that goes on for days or weeks. The lamprey run goes on for, you know, basically hours, and then that's it.
Lamprey swim upriver to spawn, but unlike salmon, lamprey bunch together in one big horde as they move upriver and run under the cover of ice. Fishermen at Mountain Village started the commercial lamprey harvest on November 17th when a few thousand pounds of lamprey were taken. That harvest was curtailed by a lack of adequate river ice to give fishermen access to the main channel, according to Schulteis. Quipuc is expecting a stronger harvest of lamprey from the village of Grayling sometime around December 8th. Subsistence fishermen are also trying to find the lamprey around Holy Cross this week. The unpredictable nature of the lamprey harvest makes it hard to commercialize, because buyers want a steady supply year after year. Nevertheless, Yukon River lamprey gets shipped far and wide for a variety of purposes.
Some of them go to Europe, some of them go to Asia, and some of them go into the bait market in the lower 48. And that's all hinges on how much volume we get. When we get a lot of lamprey, then it's feasible to ship overseas. That's 20,000-pound increments of them. It's got to be a really good year to get that kind of volume.
By those standards, 2014 was a very good year, with just over 40,000 pounds of lamprey sold commercially. The parasitic creatures are typically caught with long-handled dip nets or impaled on long poles fixed with spikes. Lamprey also have a long history of subsistence use in certain villages, where they're commonly referred to as eels. Nearly half of their mass is fat, making them a good high-energy food for sled dogs. As human food, they're often smoked and jarred, and their skins can be used to make bags or even parkas. It takes over 200 skins to make a good, waterproof lamprey skin parka. In Galena, I'm Tim Bodoni.
Alaska's Board of Fisheries is meeting in Anchorage this week to discuss 73 proposals that could change various aspects of Bristol Bay finfish fisheries. In a discussion of ethics, the board voted not to allow board member Fritz Johnson to participate in the deliberation on some of those proposals. KDLG's Molly Dishner tells us more.
Johnson is also a drift permit holder in Bristol Bay. He'll be allowed to participate in much of the meeting, but when the board makes a decision on drift permit stacking and three Nooshikak District proposals, he won't be at the table. Chair Tom Kluberton said it was basically an issue of perception.
We bring people on these boards for their expertise, and then we tend to lock it in a closet when it comes to the point where it might be most useful. But I do tend to remember many years ago, a very clear message I got in my early public life was, regardless of the outcome, conflict of interest is the appearance of conflict of interest.
Kluberton initially ruled that Johnson could participate in the permit stacking proposals, but the board decided to vote on the issue for themselves. Johnson said he was unlikely to take advantage of permit stacking, even if it were allowed.
Presently, I'm still paying for my first permit, and the idea that I could go buy another one is, in my world, it's kind of far-fetched anyway.
Kluberson said he didn't think the issue really came down to financial matters.
Yeah, my perspective after 5 years on this board and dealing with permit stacking every year, I've heard arguments extensively to both directions, every perspective, every avenue. My conclusion in the end was that I just see permit stacking as a religious issue, not a financial or conservation issue.
And ultimately, just Kluberton and Johnson voted to allow Johnson's participation, with the other five board members voting against it. Board member John Jensen, a commercial fisherman from Petersburg who has been conflicted out of proposals himself in the past, says he didn't cast his vote with a mean spirit.
We're put on these boards because of our expertise. Then when our area comes up that our family and everybody's involved in, we can't participate. It's just a really, really frustrating. It's been really frustrating for me over the years, and I can understand where you're at.
Johnson was also recused from participating in three proposals that address Nooshikak District drifters. Kluberton ruled that Johnson could not participate in the decision on Proposal 64, which would direct Fish and Game to schedule Nooshikak drift openings before high tide.
If all drifters could make money, all drifters could also stack permits. And I don't see the distinction there. And if each drifter caught X number of more fish each time because the optimum time to fish is the tide change over the course of the season, I can see that stack up.
After Johnson objected to that decision, the board voted unanimously not to allow him to participate. Johnson also will not be allowed to participate on two proposals that would increase the distance between drifters and set netters in the Noosh. Johnson can participate in a discussion of all of those proposals as part of the committee process, but won't be part of the board's deliberations and final vote. For KDLG in Anchorage at the Egan Center, I'm Molly Dishner.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you, in part, by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960. or online at alaskaboat.com.
Alaska's bountiful seafood harvest continued to be free of any radiation released from the 2011 Japanese tsunami and resultant nuclear power plant meltdown at Fukushima. In figures released this week, samples taken from the 2015 summer season showed there was no indication of any of the radionuclides associated with the power plant, such as iodine-135 and cesium-134 or 137. Marlena Brewer from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation's Division of Environmental Health said the results from 2014 suggested testing again this summer.
From some of the modeling and other efforts indicated that the highest levels of radiation might peak in 2015. So there was concern about fish in 2015 and continued monitoring. So we were successful in coordinating again with the FDA to do the analyses of the fish from this fishing season. And again, all of those results were non-detect.
Brewer said that it's possible to tell the age and source of radiation found in samples based on several characteristics.
There are some that stick around for a very long time, if you will, and then some that are have a very short lifetime, and they degrade very rapidly. So you can look for those ones that are shorter lived is an indicator of a newer source. And then also specific types of radionuclides that are specific to different, nuclear power versus other sources of radiation.
As Brewer mentioned, the DEC worked with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on the testing. As for next year, Brewer says other testing will go on, but so far none for radiation is planned. The fish species covered in the testing this summer include all five kinds of salmon, also halibut, pollock, sablefish, and Pacific cod. If you'd like to find out more, head over to dec.alaska.gov.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvests for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
A Canadian man caught at a border crossing with 51 turtles taped to his body pleaded guilty Tuesday to smuggling or attempting to smuggle more than 1,000 of the reptiles out of southeastern Michigan. Kai Zhu, 27, would order turtles online and travel to the U.S. to pick them up and then ship them to China or return with them to Ontario, Canada. He pleaded guilty to 6 crimes in federal court in Ann Arbor and faces a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison. It's illegal to export wildlife from the U.S. without a permit from the government. Zoo regularly deals in turtle shipments worth $30,000, $80,000, or $125,000, according to Assistant U.S. Attorney Sarah Woodward. In China, the turtles he smuggles are worth 2 or 3 times the amount that he pays in America.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. With help from KTOO's Lisa Fu, Jennifer Canfield, and Miko Wilson in Juneau, KIYU's Tim Bodoni in Galena, and KDLG's Molly Dishner reporting in Anchorage. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.